The House Education Committee will come to order. The time is 8:03 on February 20th. Today we are joined by Representative Sadler, Representative Drummond, Representative Ledoux, myself, Representative Gaddis, my Vice Chair, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Seaton. On our agenda today, we are hearing House Bill 27, Student Count Estimates. It is my intent to move the bill from committee, but first I understand that before us we have a CS from the sponsor. Do I have a motion to adopt the CS?
Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton.
I move we adopt the CS for House Bill 27, Version N, as a working document.
Thank you. Do I have an objection for the purpose of discussion?
Objection for purposes of discussion.
Thank you. I'd like to call the sponsor or their staff forward to speak to the changes made by the CS.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, you were gonna do it.
Representative Feige and staff, please state your name for the record. And before we begin, we'll recognize Representative Peggy Wilson has joined us.
Morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Eric Feige, representing House District 6. First thing I'd like to do is just take you quickly through the changes we made in the CS, changes between the original version and the current version. If you go to page 7, down to line 21. If a district's adjusted ADM under, we changed it to, it used to read A, now it reads D. What, the reason we did that is subparagraph D, which is on line 18 of the same page, is after you've applied all the various factors and adjustments to the school count. This is the final number that is multiplied by the base student allocation and is actually the much more representative of the actual funds that the school district receives. Continuing down along line 21 there, under D of this paragraph increases by at least 200. That used to say 200 students, but since it's not a paragraph D has been multiplied by so many different factors, it simply becomes a number, not necessarily a number of students. So we took out students and left it as 3%. The other major change here is...
Excuse me, Representative Feige. I think we're all kind of struggling to get on the same page. Are we all there?
Are we on version N?
Can we verify that we're on version N?
Version N.
Okay.
Page 7. And line 21.
Line 21. Are we all there, folks?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, please go ahead.
And then continuing on down, starting at the, on line 30 on page 7. The current statute has a provision where if a school's student count drops over 5% from one year to another, there is a means built in, commonly called the hold harmless clause, where under our current system, a school district is going to receive less, you know, obviously money directly related to the number of children in the count. And because contracts and whatnot had already been made and staff had already been hired, there had been an extra supplemental amount of money that was added to the school district's funding to the tune of about 75% of the total difference from one year to the next in the first year, 50% in the second year, and 25% in the third year. Because House Bill 27 changes the overall funding to where they get that minimum in the current year, we got rid of the hold harmless agreement. Districts will now have, because they're using the previous year's count, that also means they know well ahead of time what what their funding level is going to be, and we felt that they would have plenty of time to adjust, plan, do whatever they needed to do financially. They did not require additional hold harmless funds on top of the current fund. And those are essentially the main, one more, and then see on page 9, line 11. All that is conforming language to renumber the paragraphs. Now up here on the screen, very simply is the basic concept behind the bill. You're taking the adjusted average daily membership, and from year to year, a total of four things can happen. If your count stays the same, nobody leaves, nobody arrives, there's essentially no funding change year to year. If your numbers go down, you would actually receive more money than you would under the current funding structure under House Bill 27. And then if the count goes up, and it goes up greater than 3% or a count of 200, you would receive additional funding, but that additional funding would basically equal the amount of funding you would receive under the current statutes. So in terms of a fiscal note, that would be essentially neutral. The only other difference is if your student count rises, but it does not rise to the level of the threshold, then you would actually receive slightly less funding. And that was the purpose in the bill of having the allowing the districts to retain more money in their reserve accounts. That's why the bill raises the cap on that from 10 to 15% cover that cash flow in the event there's a rise. We had a kind of a disagreement on the original fiscal note, and I expect based on this new CS, the department will provide a new fiscal note. But we come out with essentially a slightly negative, very slightly negative fiscal note in gray on the bar charts there. Looking back 3 years, we compared what the funding was under our current law and what the funding would have been if we applied the rules of House Bill 27 to it. And as you can see, just very slight decreases from year to year. And at this time, are there any questions regarding the CS and the changes?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, that won't be on the CS, so I'll wait. So, thank you. I don't have any objection. CS.
We approved the CS.
We are.
Okay.
Go ahead. Representative Seaton.
I believe Representative Ledoux had objected for purposes of discussion. So.
That's correct.
And so Representative Ledoux
withdraws her objection.
Thank you. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Please go ahead, Representative Seaton.
Yeah, I guess I had a question on, and I can't remember what portion of the bill. It's been a while since I've dealt with it, but there was some effort, and I don't know whether it was in the hold harmless, whether or we had a provision. So if a school closed, let's say it was a single site district, we had that at ADAC situation where a school closed. And in the current formula, they wouldn't have any kids, so they wouldn't get funding. Under this formula, is there a mechanism so that they wouldn't get funded on last year's basis, even though the school closed? And I'm sorry, I wasn't able to think about this before. I just remembered it while the CS was being introduced. So.
For the record, Michael Pascal, staff to Representative Feige. Representative Seaton, through the chair, we didn't make any changes that would impact that. So if it is in existing statute, it is still there. It's not a provision I'm overly familiar with, and I think we would be happy to make sure that that does exist, because you raise a valid point. If a district ceases operation, they would no longer have any students, so they should no longer receive any funding. And I think that's what you're looking at. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yeah, that's correct. And just to make sure that we don't, with funding on last year's numbers, get into a glitch situation. And as the bill goes forward, if you would consider that, that'd be fine with me, just to make sure that we don't create a unintended window. So thank you, Madam Chair.
I have a question as well.
Representative Reinbold.
Okay, what my concern is in regards to this, obviously our oil production's going down, and let's say we have a significant drop in oil production and a drop in price of oil. What I'm concerned is this might put us in the state in a situation, you know, where we have a lot of funding and it is going to impact other pieces. So the people that I've been talking to have said that they're concerned that it's going to put the state in an uncomfortable situation if there's a significant loss of revenue to the state. And then this is forward funding, so we're not sure how it's going to impact other departments.
And again, Michael Paschal for the record, Representative Reinbold through the chair. You raise a point that I think is addressed by two issues. One is this is a very minor change in the actual amount of expenditures that are taking place on the part of the state. And the second is the state funds through the through allocation the amount of money to be spent on education, and it's divided up among the number of districts based upon the number of students or the adjusted ADM in each district. And if the amount of funds allocated to the legislature, or excuse me, from the legislature to the department for funding is not sufficient, then it's evenly divided based upon, I assume, percentages among all the districts. And that's the case today, and that would be the case in the future.
Okay. And I have a question, and that is, so it begs the question, why are you doing this? Why are you making the changes? And I think maybe to some it could be more obvious than others. So what's the purpose for this bill?
The overall purpose of the bill is to allow school districts to have have certainty in knowing exactly what they're going to receive as a minimum fund. You know, if you're a small rural school district and your numbers fluctuate, and you need to hire a certain number of teachers or a certain type of teachers, with this bill you can know when you start your budgeting process in November or December of the year prior to the school year you're figuring the numbers on. You're going to know from the start, have a real good idea of exactly how much money to plan for, that lets you know how many staff you can hire, how many folks perhaps you have to let go. What we have currently in a lot of districts is districts have to plan for a range. They have to plan for a high number. They have to plan for a low number. And this leads to at least a little bit of inflation in their budgets, perhaps. But it also leads to the effect of, in the spring, you've got a fairly low seniority instructor, teacher, that to cover your butt, you know, from the administration side, to cover your butt, you got to let that, you know, give that person a pink slip, because you might not get the student counts that would generate the revenue stream that would allow you to hire that person over the next year. So you give them a pink slip with kind of the wink wink of, don't worry, we expect the count will be there and we'll hire you. Well, if you're in Bush, Alaska, and you're kind of a heads up teacher, you're looking around thinking, well, what if that number doesn't come up? I'm going to go look for a job which I know is a sure thing. And that whole process creates a lot of turmoil in some of these more rural districts, because now somebody takes another job somewhere else, generally at the last minute, or at least in the summer prior. And the district in place has to come up with, go through the whole hiring process and find somebody and, you know, bring them in at the last minute. And it's just not, from a personnel standpoint, I can't see where it's advantageous to the students to have their personnel and their teachers turning over unnecessarily just because we figure the funding for our districts in a particular way. I think by going to this method, you give those administrators, those principals, people that are putting the budgets together, much better idea of exactly what the funding is that they can count on. If the student count does rise, we've made provisions for either the districts, if it's a special situation, to request supplemental funding. We've made it possible for the districts to retain enough reserve so that they can cover cash flow shortages. And if the rise is, crosses that 3% threshold, then they can apply directly back to the Department of Education for additional funding so that their financial needs to run their districts are met. I think it's a pretty good compromise. The fiscal note is very minor when you look at it compared to a $1.2 billion overall cost in this in the funding we provide to school districts.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Feige, this is very exciting bill for me because I have a lot of rural communities, and in those areas, it's so difficult to try to figure out what's going on and what to do for the next year. And this is going to make a huge difference for many, many, many schools across the state. And finally, they'll be able to say, oh, now I know the number. Now we know what we can work with when we do our budgets. And the uncertainty is gone because they will know. And the difference will be tremendous. And it will make a difference with pink slips. It'll make a difference when they're trying to figure the budget and there's so many questions that are unanswered. And it's really not fair, the system we have right now. And I think this is really going to make a difference, and I'm really pleased.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also am very supportive of the idea of having stable funding and known funding and everything else. I'm simply trying to look at this and see the pieces that are being moved to make sure that we get them all moved in the right way. And it just occurred to me that in the CS that we adopted, we also have intensive needs and correspondence students in that count. And I guess one thing that occurred was that in past debates, one of the biggest factors was talking about, as we were raising the level of intensive need funding, which was very necessary, was talking about intensive need students moving, and one district getting them, and then by the October count, and then they've moved, and another school district has to account for them, and someone else has the money. Since we're including intensive need students in this, does this mean that if intensive need student moves from one year to the next, the district that he moved from is going to get compensated at the intensive need level because there was an intensive need student there last year? And in most cases, I would presume the new districts would apply for supplemental funding because they received an intensive need student. And I'm not sure exactly how that works in and balances here, but I can see that we could have a little glitch in the system especially if the district that was losing the intensive student knew it before the year and so didn't hire medical personnel. And the new district that received the student, of course, would have to hire medical personnel and make those expenditures and would apply for supplemental funding. And I guess I'm just asking, has that been considered in this language and what that fiscal impact would be? And again, I'm raising it to make sure that we don't have an unintended consequence, and I'm not wanting to hold up the bill for that to be made here necessarily. So thank you.
Representative to the chair, well, two things can happen. One is the intensive needs student leaves, and the district has now received more than it would under current law. That would be money that would go into the school district. One assumes that if they ended up with they'd essentially end up with excess cash, it would balloon their reserve account. But their reserve account under this bill would be capped at 15%, and anything above that would come back to the state. The other issue is for the new district that did not have that student needs child there before. Again, it's depending on where they fell in the threshold. If it was a small district, and you know, if it was a small district, it would certainly run their adjusted ADM above the 3% threshold, in which case the supplementary funding as written out in the bill would apply. And if there was some other consideration that where either the district did not have sufficient reserve funds to cover the shortage in cash flow, there are still provisions there on line 26 on page 7 that would allow the district to apply to the Department of Education for additional funding if there was a special situation where they required additional funding. But as far as the district that lost this the special needs, that's kind of up to them. There's nothing specific in the bill, nor is there anything in really didn't try to micromanage it down to that those individual situations.
If I could add to that, Michael Pascal, for the record, Representative Seaton, through the chair. One important point to remember is that the district, in most cases, is only going to receive funding for that intensive student for the year that the student is actually enrolled in that district. In other words, if the student is enrolled in that district this year, they will receive funding next year for that intensive needs student, unless they were able to justify supplemental funding. And I would assume in the department's review of that process, they would be looking to see whether or not the district had enough reserve funding to carry it from a cash flow standpoint. Because they would be getting the following year, they would be receiving payment for that student. Also, in discussion, we discussed with the department and with some districts about intensive needs students, and they don't tend to move very often. The nature of their disabilities, they're often in homes that have been modified. I know in our district, several of them are on a special bus route because they don't have the ability to get to and from the bus stop and those types of things. So there's not a lot of movement of those students compared to the general student population. And I'd be happy to try and do some research to see if we can make sure that we're not creating an unintended consequence with that question.
And follow up, thank you, Madam Chair. And that's what I'd hope we'd do is maybe just work with the department and get a model and see how many students move and what the impact would be so that as this goes through finance and everything, that question could be answered and you'll have that information. So thank you. I guess the only other question on that was the correspondence. I haven't heard any anything on correspondence, students, and is there some special impact that we are perceiving with correspondence students, or is that a highly variable number, or I'm just not familiar with that.
Representative, through the chair, the factor or the number obtained for the correspondence study is in paragraph D on page 7, line 18. Again, that's part of the existing current formula. All we're doing in the bill is we're taking the number that is used to multiply against the base student allocation. We're taking that number. We're just getting that number from the previous October instead of the current October. Right? There's no, the bill doesn't seek to change anything with how the correspondence students are counted.
And Madam Chair, I haven't seen any information on the variability of correspondence students, so that would be something that would be good to have as the bill moves along. Since we're including the correspondence students in this funding for the past year, and I'm
as a separate category. It would be just good to have that information.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, and can I just make this statement? You're also including our public charter school students in there as well, correct?
To the extent they're counted within the school
That's
district's
correct.
Number, yeah.
If the committee wishes, I wanted to let them know that we do have the CFO for the Mat-Su School District online if we have any questions from that standpoint. Seeing none, thank you very much. Do you have anybody else? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Wilson.
I think it would be nice to hear from someone, you know.
Apologize. You'd like to hear from the CFO of the Mat-Su School District to hear his point of view? Mr. Fulp, are you online?
Muted.
I think we're having a system problem, I hear. Thank you. Brief at ease.
Anyone online?
We're back on the record. This is Representative Gaddis. Mr. Fulp, you're ready to go. The committee wanted to hear the Mat-Su School District's thoughts on this particular bill. And have you been online the whole time? Mr. Fulp, are you with us?
Hello, this is Luke Fulp.
Luke, we can hear you loud and clear. He clearly cannot hear us. Go ahead.
I don't know if my voice is getting through, but I can't hear anything coming back. This is Luke Fulp calling from the Mat-Su Borough School District.
Luke, we can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me now? And here feel like AT&T here. Luke, can you hear me now? Clearly we can. We'll take another brief at ease.
Thank you, Representative Gaddis.
Thank you.
Sorry for the delay.
And we did hear your presentation last time, but the committee had hoped that you had received the CS and that you might have a brief synopsis that you could share with us.
Sure. Through the chair, I just want to thank the committee again for letting me provide some input on this bill. Matsuburo School District is encouraged by this bill. We still think that it would be a positive funding change to K-12 public education, in that it would reduce one more variable in the budgeting process, and that being the projected enrollment. So we would be able to know with certainty what we could rely on as a worst case scenario when it comes to the number of students we'd be serving in the upcoming year, because that would be based on our prior year count. Hearing some of the discussion this morning, it seemed like there was questions surrounding the actual fiscal note and the impact, the fiscal impact to the state. And I think the really the crux of the matter is that this is simply a funding lag. So it really is a bill that refers to the time the districts, when the districts receive money, based on whether that's the actual count in a school year or the count in a preceding year. But again, the main component that the Matsuburo School District supports when it comes to this bill is the ability to hold an adequate fund balance, so that lag in funding doesn't hurt or isn't detrimental to a growing school district such as ourselves. So really, when the discussion came up of intensive needs students and possibly serving those intensive needs students, more intensive needs students in 1 year and then not having them the next year and still receiving that money. The way I see it from a budgeting standpoint is simply that the school district would cover the cost for having an increase in any funding for students in 1 year. And then if the next year they don't have those students and they receive that lagged funding from the state for those students, well, that money just goes back to replenishing their fund balance in which they spent out the prior year. So in 1 year where they didn't have those students, or they had those students and they weren't receiving the money for them, they would be spending out of their reserves to make sure that they provided adequate services. And then in the following year, when they received all of the money for the students they had for the prior year, that would just be lagged funding to replenish the money they spent out of the reserve. So I see it as more of a timing issue with cash flow and whatnot, but it does really alleviate some problems with regards to the budget process, and again, just creating a little bit more certainty around that with reducing one of the variables that's present.
Thank you, Mr. Fulp. Are there any questions from the committee for Mr. Fulp? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Representative Feige? Excuse me. Do you have anybody else that you'd like to bring forward?
No, ma'am. Not at this time.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Oops, sorry.
You've got a question for the sponsor, if we could.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the fiscal note, I see of $7.1 million starting in FY16 and going on for the rest of the short outlook here. It gives me some pause if I could see that the fiscal note was going to increase for a year or so to help repopulate districts' reserves and then go away. That'd be one thing, but it looks like this goes on in perpetuity. Is that in fact the case? Do you anticipate there'll be another $7.1 million each year in expenses from the department each year forever?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, that was one of the major disagreements we had with the department. We didn't believe their fiscal note was calculated correctly. We've been in conference with them, and they've indicated that because of the CS, they will be generating a new fiscal note. And we'll see what the new fiscal note says. But
and
based on our analysis, we don't think it's that high.
And I need to check real quick. This bill does go to finance. Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Feige and staff. Perfect segue into the administration. They'd like to come up and give their thoughts. And of course, please remember to introduce yourself for the record.
For the record, I'm Elizabeth Noodleman, Director of School Finance and Facilities. And with regards to the fiscal note and the bill before us, we have not recalculated a fiscal note for the current amended bill, but we will do that. The HB 27, the bill changes the count process to use the current year's count for the succeeding year. So this year's actual count of 2013 would be paid out in 2014, as an example. When there are increases, the bill provides the opportunity for those increases to be funded two times. Once in the current year as a supplemental, if it qualifies, and the second time in the following year when the count is applied. So the department's fiscal note shows the cost of funding the supplemental. And we'll be happy to go back and calculate a fiscal note for the current version of the bill.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you do the counts, but at the same time, the counts don't always constantly statewide go up. Lots of times, in some areas they go down, in other areas they go up. So that usually adjusts itself over time.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Okay. Madam Chair,
please.
When there is an increase count, like in Mat-Su, there usually is a decrease count somewhere else, and so that over time balances out. And so I don't think you can say that it continues because by the next year the counts overall are going to be down in another area. And so you won't be giving those people funding. You will be giving Mat-Su funding. And so that evens out. So this, to me, doesn't continue. It just evens out.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Wilson, for clarifying that for me. The way the Department of Education calculates the fiscal notes for the public school funding education formula is that we isolate the provision that is entered into a bill. And whether that is a career and technical education increase or whether that is an increase in a geographic cost factor, we isolate to determine how that factor affects the cost of the public school education bill. So in this fiscal note, we simply isolated with the year's data that we used the impact of the supplemental. And we did not project out what other changes may or may not happen in the public school funding formula. So that has been our standard calculation to review component changes to the public school education funding formula is to isolate that component and show in the fiscal note the projected fiscal cost.
Follow-up? If that's been the practice, then maybe some of the fiscal notes that we have gotten are inaccurate because you have to look at what the other ramifications are along with it. And if you did that, it would be balanced out, and you would see that in the long run.
Through the chair, what is presented in the fiscal note is only the impact of this change. It does not include other impacts, such as a school closing, or other impacts, such as an increase in another area of the foundation funding formula. It simply isolates the element that is in the current piece of legislation that we're analyzing.
Please.
Thank you very much, and that does clarify it for me, but that tells me that I can't really go by what this fiscal note says because it's inaccurate in reality. It's not inaccurate for what you're saying, but it is inaccurate in reality for what we have to look at ahead of time and try to figure out what the ramifications are overall.
And through the chair, I would just clarify that it accurately projects the cost of the supplemental. And other things that are happening, I think, is what you're speaking to.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. Can you hear me okay? That was a little off mic. I want to kind of associate myself with the previous questions. It sounds like you're technically correct. You're analyzing the impact of the effect of this legislation on the supplemental funding mechanism. So we see the increase from that. What Representative Wilson is asking, and what I'm asking as well, is clarify, this does not reflect the net impact. There has to be some associated decrease elsewhere that you're not calculating. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, again, I just want to really emphasize that we're just presenting to you the effects of this change to the formula. And had this change been several years ago, and had it been when the hold harmless was added, we would have also brought you a fiscal note that said, if a bill is passed and entered into law with this hold harmless provision, then this would be the dollar effect. That wouldn't have included, any estimate as to changes in population or changes in BSA. We just isolate so you know what that component does to the foundation formula.
Right, and that's a fair answer. You're answering a specific answer to a specific question. The question for us is we look at that information and have to assume if we have to ask ourselves if there is going to be a corresponding decrease in expenses to the state, because it's kind of a zero sum. If a student's moving from one district to another, yes, there will be an increase in the new district, but we want to see if your fiscal note measures the effect of the loss of that student from the sending district. And the answer I think I'm hearing is no, it does not.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, when I analyzed this bill, there was no reductions to the public education formula. And so I think that the person we heard from Matt Sue spoke to it and called it just a lag in receiving their funding. The supplemental is the only piece that's not a lag. That is additional funding in the year that it is triggered or otherwise applied for.
Representative Sadler.
I'm not trying to pin you down necessarily, but I just need to find out, is the effect of this bill going to be a 7.1 or approximately thereabouts increase in the cost for public education of the state each year ad infinitum, or is there going to be some decrease someplace? Looking for a yes or a no.
Through the chair, the answer will be different each year. The supplemental amount that is required each year will be different depending on the circumstances. If there is an increase of 5 intensive in a district and they're going to be paid for that the following year, and they also need the money for those 5 intensive in the current year, then that will be supplemental funding. We'll pay for those intensive students twice. We'll pay for them once in the supplemental, and then we'll pay for them when the count is applied in the following year.
And with your indulgence, one last
please
point. So again, when the count is applied in the future, is it a fair assumption that there will be a loss or a reduction in the intensive needs for the sending district sometime in the future? Is there going to be a corresponding decrease in costs someplace, or will it only go up?
Through the chair, I'm sorry, I actually couldn't hear your whole question.
So my question is, will there be a decrease, or will the only direction for expenses only go up? The assumption being, if an intensive needs student goes from one district to another, yes, there will be increase at the receiving community. Is there ever going to be a corresponding decrease from the sending community's district?
Through the chair, in 2 years out, there could be a decrease.
There could or there would.
if the student is not in the count 2 years out, the district would not be funded for that intensive student.
And is that factor reflected in the fiscal note?
Through the chair, yes.
It is? Then I've got a fundamental misunderstanding of this. And I'd like to have it resolved if I can.
Through the chair, I would be happy to answer another question to clarify that.
I've taken enough time, I think.
Representative Reinbold.
And I think that's the second concern I have with this, even though I think planning is great. I mean, obviously, everyone likes to be able to plan ahead, but all the departments would like to plan ahead. So, you know, that's where I want to make sure that the overall global impacts are looked at. Education, I know, is incredibly important, and I think it's a good idea to plan ahead. But what my question in regards to this is if a student goes from one school, an intensive needs student, you know, the multiplier, I think it's, is it 15 right now? Of the base student
application? Through the chair, it's 13.
13 right now. I know it progressively goes up. If that student moves, you know, let's say from one elementary school to another, does it take 2 years for that funding to follow that student?
Through the chair, it would take 2 years for the school the student was leaving. It would take 2 years for that funding to leave that school.
So the receiving school wouldn't have that funding for 2 years?
Through the chair, the receiving school could apply for supplemental funding.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There were some spreadsheets that were prepared, and I was just, it doesn't seem like all committee members have those. Were those distributed to the committee, or were those just explanatory materials?
Representative Seaton, where'd you get the spreadsheets? And then we'll ask that person.
Thank you. From the Department of Education. These were dated. It's so small, I can't see it there. This was spreadsheet number 2. Did everybody? I'm not sure that they were distributed or not.
Through the chair, the department had some specific questions and followed up with both the sponsor and Representative Seaton, who had asked the question. And we do have that memo that we could bring forward.
Madam Chair, I would like to request that the spreadsheets that were prepared to answer the question I had posed last time, mm-hmm. I think that would be helpful for committee members, and it would also be helpful to follow the bill for future. So not sure that it makes a whole lot of difference now, but if those could be submitted to follow the bill, that would be helpful for future committees, I think.
Sounds like a great idea. Representative Reinbold. Sorry, I'm looking at her. Representative Ledoux.
So I'm not sure whether or not you said this, but somebody during the course of this testimony said that if the sending school district had received the money in 1 year and then the student left that school district, that the additional money would go into that school district's fund balance, which can arise over 15%, and that would go back to the state. So I guess I've got two questions there. First of all, would it go back to the state, or would it go back to the borough if it was an organized borough?
Through the chair, the current law allows school districts to retain 10% of their operating expenditures in fund balance. And if the district goes over that, they are required to return that to the state. Thus far, districts have not returned money to the state. They have found necessary expenditures or they have, had a lower local contribution.
So I guess that was my second question, is why would we assume that the school district couldn't find other uses for this money rather than sending it back to the state? And I think you've answered that.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I was encouraged by the response by the MATSU superintendent that there was, you know, that would be their particular intention on taking money, having money in their reserve fund, because they would know they would get funded for that student in the following year. You know, the only concern is that that's not a criteria for the department to use if people have requested supplemental funding because they receive intensive students. So I guess my question to the department is, does the department see, and would you anticipate that the department would look at it in that same aspect if people apply under the supplemental funding option, that if they had intensive need student come in, that the department's projection would be you're getting funded for that student next year, so go ahead and take that out of your reserves in the current year? Or is it more likely the department will say, oh, that's an unexpected outlay, and therefore would accept that as reasonable request for supplemental funding in the current year, in which they received a intensive need student that they didn't have the prior year?
Through the chair, we have not had a discussion on how the portion where the department would look at requests for supplemental funding. We have not discussed that. I believe that it would take some discussion and likely a regulation to implement that.
Yeah. And thank you, Madam Chair. And that, you know, it was my concern about the supplemental funding students needing, and I think there is a mechanism that was identified by MATSU where the department could say, you are going to get funded by this for this person, it's just going to be a lag of 1 year.
Right.
And my concern was that we would almost automatically be double funding intensive need students that move. And so since there is a mechanism that the department can tell districts, you are getting funded for that student, it's just a lag of a year, then I'm much more comfortable with that situation than it was before. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And let me, for clarification, the CFO, Luke Fulp, is not our superintendent, but rather the CFO. And so just for clarification, he has not gotten a new job description. with that in mind. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, and I'm not sure Elizabeth can answer, but maybe she knows. Now, if you have an intensive needs student in this school, and the school has made contract with a person to be with that child on a one-to-one all the time, and you have that contract with that, this intensive needs student goes to this next school. Even though, I mean, people say, well, they're getting paid for it, when they're not, but they had a contract with someone. Now, can they break that can the school break that contract, or do they have to fulfill that contract? That's my question.
And through the chair, Representative Wilson, I would not be the best person to answer that. I think the school district where that was occurring would need to make that decision.
And I follow up, please. And I don't know whether there's a clause in the contract that says if that student moves, then we can break your contract. I mean, I don't know how that works myself. And so I kind of would like to know what the general rule of thumb is across the state, because if they can't break the contract, then that school still will need that money for that intensive needs student, even if it gets paid for twice. So So that's a question in my mind that just isn't, has, I don't know the answer to.
Representative Ledoux.
You know, it seems where we're getting hung up on is the intensive needs students. So I guess I'm just wondering, I mean, what sort of money are we talking about in general with the intensive needs if every single one of them moved, which is very, very unlikely? I mean, are we going down a rabbit hole on this for one or two intensive needs students that might be moving, and a school district might end up, you know, one or two times getting additional money? Or is this something that's really going to pose a significant problem, forever?
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in response to that question a little bit, it might be helpful, Ms. Nittleman, when the department does prepare the new fiscal note for the CS, to give us, for illustrative purposes, to go back 3 or 4 years of previous student counts and funding levels, just to see how that how the changes in the CS might work their way through the system. And that would help give me some comfort as to what the actual effect has been. If you could do that, I don't know if I can make that request, it's a finance type thing, but that would be helpful for me to see. Thanks.
Thank you. Any more questions for administration? Representative Reinbold.
Okay, I guess what would help us, because I'm a little caught up on this intensive need as well. If they're based, and I'm not including federal funds, but if it's 13 times the roughly 6,000 BSA, that's $78,000 a year. For 2 years, that'd be $156,000. So that's a pretty significant chunk of change, you know, for the school. I know it goes up, I think, in 2015. To 15, and in 2017, I think that the base student allocation for the intensive needs goes up to 17. So let's say it was times 17, the base student allocation. So that's 6,000 times 17, that's $132,000. For 2 years, that would be $264,000. It's a huge chunk. It will impact the kids. So I guess what in a broad picture, how many intensive need kids are there? And does federal funding follow on a monthly or an annual basis? And how often is there movement with these kids around? Because I just really believe that the money should follow the kid immediately. I don't think it should be a two-year lag, because it's going to be lagging on the other side now. We're going to forward fund you, and then it'll be lagging for that child. And to me, it's all about the kids. So,
through the chair, I'd be happy to go back and collect some more data and look at the new bill language and prepare a fiscal note and bring that back also.
Thank you very much. I think that will be helpful as this bill moves along. Representative Ledoux.
Well, just to follow up on Representative Reinbold's comments and questions, in reality, I mean, if the student moves from one school district to the other school district, with the likelihood that the receiving school district will receive supplemental funding based upon that child. I guess I don't see this as something which is going to negatively impact the child. I was more concerned with how it was going to negatively impact, you know, the state spending process. But if we have the answers to those questions about how many students actually move and so forth, we can kind of figure out whether this is going to be a significant problem, or we're spending a lot of time and effort over, you know, that maybe one or two school districts will maybe get a little bit of extra money one time.
Thank you. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we're getting down into the weeds a little bit here. I don't know how we can possibly predict what a family will do with their child. You got to hope that they will knowing that they get expensive services from their school district, you have to hope that they will coordinate with the school district and at least try to give them a heads up that they're going to move and that perhaps they might even move to coincide with the start of a school year rather than mid-year. The other issue is if the funding follows the intensive need student, for example, the other school district is going to have to find this specialized aid, and you can't make that person move from the previous school district. So I think we're definitely getting a little far off the track here. Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
And Madam Chair, just to be clear, and I agree, we're getting a little far off the track here, especially when we're talking about, you know, the contracts and all. The only effect that this has is not on a student that moves during a year. It's that the school district is getting funded for people that moved last year, and they're still getting funded for somebody that they hired nobody for, because this year they're not having the intensive needs student, but they get it, they get funded for them because they were in their base count as adjusted, which is what we adopted in the CS. So we adjusted for correspondence and intensive needs student count in the CS. So that means that your last year's number of intensive needs students, whether you have them or not, you will get forward, you will get funded for in this year. And so that's where this, I mean, I definitely don't think we need to get into the aspect of if an intensive student moves during the year, because that has no application to this bill. That's a current situation and will remain a current situation. It's just what we've adopted here is they'll get paid for that student in the previous year. And whether it's a huge amount or not, you know, the goal here of discussing this is to make sure as we construct the bill, we take care of the unintended consequences that we can see. And that's why I've brought up the question with the sponsor, just so as they go forward, if there is a little glitch in there, that can get resolved. And I'm not prepared to make an amendment to resolve that at this point, because I think it's going to take some thought and discussion. So, Madam Chair, I'm not wanting to hold this up over that question.
Thank you. Do we have any more questions for administration?
Well, this, I'm not sure this is a question, but this is in response to Representative Seaton.
Excuse me. Do we have any more questions for administration? I do. Representative Drummond, you'll be.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did quiz Superintendent Browder of the Anchorage School District regarding their opinion of this bill, and they were fine with it. He had an interesting statement that Ms. Noodleman might be able to comment on. He says the increase of the fund balance retention to 15% matches best practice for governmental accounting and would allow the Anchorage School District to maintain reserves at similar levels to our national peer districts. Ms. Noodleman, were you is what the state of Alaska is currently allowing as a fund balance retention out of compliance with best practices in governmental accounting?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, there is a range of best practices. And so I think that both the current amount is acceptable, and I certainly understand moving up on that range is also acceptable.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Noodleman.
Thank you.
We've had a lot of conversation back and forth. And if I can bring the bill sponsor or his staff up just for final comment or questions so that, and Representative Ledoux, it's your turn.
So if I understand this correctly, if a student now moves in mid-year after the October count, we've got the same problem or same glitch that we're going down this rabbit hole anyway?
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Is that a question for the bill sponsor?
It's actually kind of a dialogue, if that's okay.
Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, that issue is really not on the table at all. The only issue on the table is, after that student has moved in 1 year, does the district from which he moved get funded for him again in the following year? And that's what currently the technical language of this does that. And so the question will be, as this bill moves forward, to see if there's a way to refine that so that that doesn't become a weighty factor in the decision making at finance, because I think it could become a factor weighting on it. And I don't want to see the bill held up. I think it's a good bill. I think it does all those things. And so it's simply the future funding of a student that's no longer there. It's a great planning tool and everything else, but where we have students that can be very expensive once you run in not only a geographic cost differential for those services and everything else, for a student that moves, it could be significant, and I don't think that's the intention of the sponsors. And so it's nothing that should hold up this bill, but it's something that should be considered as the bill goes forward to make sure that unintended consequence doesn't occur.
Thank you. And we have the bill sponsor here. As you've heard our dialogue back and forth, do you have any comments or clarification? And if I'll remind you to introduce yourself for the record.
And once again, Representative Feige, District 6. We're getting all wrapped around the axle on special needs students. It's on the count. It takes into account everything. Either you get a family of 15 that moves into a school district that only had 30 people in it. It accounts for if you have one special needs student that moves into a district with 20 folks in it. It's all based on the count. It's all based on the money. And, quite frankly, there are not that many districts that go up more than 3% in a year. There's a couple, don't get me wrong, but they don't necessarily consistently go up 3% year after year after year. And that's something to consider when you look at the overall impact. There are districts that go down. There's districts that go up less than 3%. A rise when you look at what education would cost in any given year compared to the way we do it now versus if this bill were enacted, there really is not a significant difference. There are instances, as was pointed out by the author of the fiscal note, very specific cases where, sure, a district may get paid more than they would have otherwise. However, that's balanced by, as Representative Wilson pointed out, there's other times when districts actually get paid less than what they would have gotten paid under our current system. And all that works together, as we figured it, and balances out to a very reasonable fiscal impact on the state. I think, even if the fiscal note is slightly positive, if you look at all the other benefits, because administrators will have the certainty to plan their budgets, because municipal governments will have the ability to very specifically budget their assets and their resources, the benefits of doing it this way greatly outweigh any minor additional cost. And that's kind of the reason we're doing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Feige. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, we did hear the department's fiscal analyst say the bill does mean a $7.1 million increase per year. Of course, that's the old version, and anticipate a new updated version of the fiscal note for the CS. But she also said that the fiscal note does reflect both the increase in costs through the supplemental funding mechanism for the receiving district and the net result of even of any loss in the sending district. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that, but can you help me understand? Can you amplify that situation at all? Help me understand it.
Representative Sadler, through the chair, as I understood it, she looked at one very specific aspect of the bill, which would be if a district does have a rise of more than 3%, they would get supplemental funding. Mm-hmm.
I guess my view on that is, if you look, if you, my belief on a fiscal note has always been that it's, what is the difference in cost now versus what is the difference in cost, you know, if the bill is enacted? Quite frankly, if a district has a rise, they're, under the current system, they're going to get paid for whatever that rise includes. Under House Bill 27, they'll get paid what they had last year plus the rise. It's the same number. It's a neutral fiscal note in that particular case. And that's, again, one of the major disagreements we had with the department.
Any more questions for the bill sponsor? Is there a motion to move the bill from committee? Well, I apologize. Representative Seaton? I thought your hand was up for a question. Is there a motion to move the bill from committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move committee substitute for House Bill 27, version N, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendation.
Seeing no objections, the bill is moved from the Education Committee to the next one, the Finance Committee. We next meet at our usual time this coming Friday, February 22nd, and we're scheduled to hear HJR 1, and we are adjourned.